Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios for this Monday morning, a drive time hour of Tipping Point with your host, Zach Yenser. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Welcome to this news hour, our Monday news hour here on the program. Our Just the Facts, No Bull, straightforward discussion of the stories and the issues coming out of the weekend, driving the week ahead. I'm looking forward to today's show. We've got a couple of reporters from around the state who will be with us to talk about some of those big stories. We'll kick it off in just a minute with my first guest, Jen Fifield, a reporter for the Arizona Republic, been covering the election audit of Maricopa County ballots. Jen will be with us for the first half of the show. And then new local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star down here in Tucson will be on to talk about Reed Park, Tucson Police Department pay raises, high-quality pre-K funding, and more. A busy week for Pima County and the city of Tucson. Last week, we will cover it all. That's our show today for you, and welcome aboard. And let's welcome aboard Jen Fifield, our guest here from the Arizona Republic. Jen, good to be with you. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks so much for having me.
You've had a busy weekend. Your reporting is going national, which makes it really cool that you're with us today. You're getting around.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a ton of national interest on this audit.
Absolutely. And for a number of reasons. Let's set the table really quick here. What we're talking about and covering is an audit of just Maricopa County's 2.1 million ballots, correct? These are not the entire state's returns, just Maricopa. What is being looked for and where and how as this election audit of those 2.1 million ballots are happening at the Coliseum?
Right. Well, first, I think it's important to distinguish this audit as not being an audit that the county is doing, that the Secretary of State's audit office is doing, and that's usually the parties that are doing the post-election audits. This is being done by the Arizona Senate, which was unhappy with the auditing that the county did and decided to take this on its own by subpoenaing the county for all of this information. That included the ballots, but also all this voter data, as well as the voting machines, so they could examine the machines so that they look at the voter rolls. So basically what they're looking at is they're doing a full recount of all 2.1 million ballots, very rare in election sphere that kind of recount happens. They're also looking at the voter rolls to see there's been allegations that there's people voting that are ineligible to vote, such as people who are dead and other people are voting for them, people who are not legally in this country. So they're checking the voter rolls for that. Now, I'm not sure if that work is going to continue because of something that came out last week. They also took apart the voting machines and are looking in detail to see whether they were connected to the internet. This is something that the county's already done, but the Senate is doing it again. So it's a wide-ranging audit. It's going to continue for weeks.
With Jen Fifield again from the Arizona Republic, Phoenix-based newspaper. Jen has been covering this issue for really since it began. Only about 250,000 of Maricopa's 2.1 million ballots, Jen, have been processed. At that rate, the hand recount will not be finished until August. And that's a hypothetical, Jen, because it's not going to go till August. The deadline the state Senate gave them was mid-May. There's a graduation happening in the Arizona Veterans Memorial Museum end of May. And that deadline was agreed upon by Cyber Ninjas and the state Senate. Is that what you're hearing, that we're only about an eighth of the way through the total number of ballots?
Yes, that count is correct. What's unclear is whether this audit has an end date. So at first, Cyber Ninjas, which is the main contractor the Senate hired to do the audit, said this is going to take about 16 days to hand count all these ballots. Now, election consultants had told the Republic and others this is going to take way longer than this, but they had only rented the Coliseum, the Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Phoenix, where it's being done for, I think it was about 20 days, so until Friday, this Friday. Now, as this Friday has approached, the Senate has then said, well, we're just going to, while the graduations happen, put the ballots somewhere else, and then we're going to resume the audit. That hasn't been confirmed by the State Fair Board, which controls the Coliseum. There has been talk that there's a gun show in early July that might disrupt this as well. But like you said, if they continue at the same pace, this would take past that gun show as well. It's just all really unclear what their plan is at this point.
With Jen Fifield from the Arizona Republic this morning, just to finish setting the table, and then we'll get into a few more details in part two of our conversation after the break. You are, as they say, have been in the room where it happens, not just as a poll reporter, Jen, but one of the requirements after there was some back and forth of whether cyber ninjas in this process would let reporters in. There was a yes, then there was a no, then there was a yes again. Part of the requirement, as I'm aware, was for you to give away your phone, your papers, and volunteer for 6 hours as an auditor, as someone on the floor, being a part of this process as a volunteer. Is that correct? This was a number of weeks ago, but it was near the beginning, right?
Right. So at first it was unclear what access we would have. And then we were told that we would need to serve as observers, like you said, not bring in a notepad, not bring in a camera or a recording device, and basically just use that to observe and report back later what we saw. Now, halfway through my shift, when I pointed out that there were blue pens on the floor, this was before actual real ballots were on the floor. I just wanted to clarify that. And before any counting was happening, I pointed that out on my Twitter, and they then told me I wasn't able to do updates until after my shift. Now, after that whole thing happened, they then changed the rules for reporters again. They weren't going to let observers in. So the Arizona Broadcast Association, Arizona Mirror, and the Arizona Republic worked with an attorney to negotiate access that allow us now to have a pool rotation, which means that one reporter, one photographer, and one videographer in the Coliseum at all times watching the audit from the bleachers. We can bring in whatever we want. It's almost the equivalent to what the county would allow us to do during their audits. So that's provided us a 24-hour look at what's going on. It's been really nice to be in there.
Jen Fifield, before we go, this has obviously gotten national coverage. It's being talked about by both the Democratic and the Republican parties here and everywhere. What are some of the dynamics of this that have raised the most eyebrows or caused the most concern, including Ken Bennett, the guy running this thing? That's not a partisan question in my mind. This has been a messy process. I think everybody on both sides of the aisle would agree. Give us some details about what you're seeing, what you're hearing as you're sitting there watching this process.
I think what stands out to me, at least, is the ways that this is different from a typical audit, right? So there's not typically a ballot inspection process after the ballots are counted. That is something that we are still unclear what they're actually doing. There's been conspiracy theories that they're checking for watermarks because Donald Trump secretly inserted ballots into the stack that would be counted with his own watermarks to prove that fraud could happen in elections. There's another conspiracy that bamboo fibers are in the ballots because ballots were flown in from China that would have bamboo fibers. Of course, both of those, there's no proof of any of that. This is things that they're checking for. The other main concerns that the DOJ wrote to the Senate about was the security of the ballots and a potential voter intimidation as they try to check the voter rolls. Now, the Senate has announced that they have indefinitely suspended the voter roll, the voter canvassing, where they're going to people's doors and calling them in order to figure out whether they voted in this election, over concerns of voter intimidation. So we'll see if that continues. But like I said, there's just a lot of aspects of this audit that are pretty new when it comes to a typical audit.
Last question, we'll go to a break. I just want to close this out. What is actually being checked, and how much actual cross-checking can be made, right? So like names can't be seen. There's a lot that can't be seen by auditors. What exactly is being looked for, and what answers will it provide?
I think I could talk for hours on that, but to summarize, I think that the auditors are left with what information they have. They wanted to at first do a check of signatures to verify that voter signatures were accurate. They're no longer doing that. They only have the digital copies of the envelopes. I'm not sure if that was the hurdle that made them no longer want to do that aspect. They have the ballots, but they don't have clear direction from the county where these ballots were cast, how many are in each box. They don't have batch reports showing this is how many were counted in this box, and this is the results we got from this box. So really, they're limited in that, you know, they could count these ballots, but for now, all they can do is provide a total of the number of ballots and the votes that they got, which may pose some problems when they try to release a final report.
We're speaking with Jen Fifield this morning, reporter from the Arizona Republic, who has been monitoring and watching and even in some aspects participating in the review of 2.1 million Maricopa-only ballots, part of the audit asked for by the State Senate of Arizona. We're going to go to our first break of the hour. When we come back, we'll continue part two of our conversation with Jen and take a look forward at what the process the rest of the way looks like as we, again, spend this news hour here on Tipping Point on Monday, making sense of the big stories impacting us locally and at the state level and trying to make sense of what's going on. We'll be right back here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com. Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in the Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Well, Welcome back to you listening here in Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome to this Monday morning news hour here on Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, joined by Jen Fifield, reporter from the Arizona Republic, who has been one of the reporters allowed on the floor and in the building of the Coliseum to look at, ask questions about, and report on the election audit. Jen, a number of things I want to get through. I think that we can do it. I want to ask you about the fact that all five Maricopa County supervisors will be subpoenaed today over the audit for not turning over certain equipment and information for review. It came up in your conversation a few days ago with Ken Bennett, again, former Secretary of State, gubernatorial candidate here in Arizona, not a liaison for the state Senate. But before we go there and wrap there, Jen, is there anything that we're going to end up with here in your mind that will either ease Republicans' concern of fraud or convince Democrats that there was significant integrity concerns that need to be resolved? Is this going to move the needle for either party on this issue, the results of this audit?
Well, I think that really the results of the audit will be up to the public to judge. What I'm trying to do is get out as much information as I can about what's going on and make people decide for themselves whether this audit should be trusted when the results are released. The one thing that it is doing is definitely splintering the Republican Party more. Like you said, the Board of Supervisors are the ones that control this information, that help run these elections. There are four of them are Republicans and longtime friends with some senators who now I hear that they're not talking. So, we're going to have to see whether those relationships go back to normal, whether they're able to work together on behalf of the public. Whether this leads to any voting changes across the country is also up in the air. Inaccurate or accurate results could be used by lawmakers that are looking to change how voting happens. And so those are some of the things that I'm watching for as the report is released.
You know, I think you're right, Jen. This is splintering the GOP. Prominent state Senator Paul Boyer, Republican in the state Senate, is supposed to have said a few days ago that he is regretting this audit. It makes us look like idiots. I didn't think it would be this ridiculous. It's embarrassing to be a state senator at this point. Obviously, one man's opinion, and it's not the full opinion of the state Senate on the Republican side, but it's interesting to see someone of his profile come out and say that. You talked to Ken Bennett the other day. Tell us a little bit about that conversation. He's been fairly open about what he thinks is going well and what isn't with this audit. Give us the lowdown on that conversation, Jen.
Well, you know, Ken Bennett has always said that he's here to oversee the process as far as the Senate. The question is how much control he has and how much control Senate President Karen Spahn has. She did an interview recently where she said that she was, she was unhappy that it wasn't moving as quickly as it could. She didn't really say that she was unhappy with the whole process. She doesn't really bend to the fact that this is something that has gone a little bit off of what she had hoped it was supposed to do by assuring people that their vote is sound. I think that it's actually raising more concerns, and so that's one thing that we'll be watching and asking more about is whether this has accomplished the Senate's goal of reassuring voters of anything.
Yeah, I actually have Senate President Karen Fan on the show on Friday. So we start the week with this topic. We'll end the week with this topic. Certainly everybody realizes now $150,000 was not enough by far to accomplish what this process was hoped to accomplish. That amount, of course, was what was provided by the state Senate. Jen, to wrap up, Jen Fifield from the Arizona Republic, all five Maricopa County supervisors will be subpoenaed today, Monday, over the audit for not turning over certain equipment and information for review as requested by the Senate. Some passwords, some routers, some things like that. Break that down for us. There's really three parts here, I guess. There's the physical ballots and then some of those technological pieces. Why are these things being requested, and why are the county supervisors pushing back?
Well, first of all, we don't know whether the subpoenas will actually be filed. This is a threat that the Senate's lawyer made late last week, that if they don't get the routers and the passwords, like you mentioned, then they would file these subpoenas. That's something we're watching today, and we'll definitely be reporting on if it happens. Basically, what it is there was a slew of information requested under the original subpoenas, and that included these county routers. I'm not sure what routers exactly they are, what they're used for, but the sheriff has brought up security concerns about law enforcement data being released if the Senate was to, and its contractors was to, get a hold of the routers. The passwords that you mentioned would be administrative passwords that would allow the contractors to see the actual source code of the voting machine, something that the county doesn't even have in its custody, it says. And that is another question of what the auditors are trying to accomplish with all this and what they're actually looking for when they look this in depth. So, and one of the things that passwords may be used for is to check whether there's internet access on these machines. The routers, the same thing. They would potentially show a log of the times that the internet has been connected on these machines. But all of this is still up in the air, and there's back and forth on both sides, so it's really been hard to sort out. I'm sure we'll learn more this week.
Jen, as we close, Jen Fifield of the Arizona Republic, one of the pool reporters covering the audit in the building on the floor, watching it happen. We've got about 2.5 minutes, Jen, to close. What do you expect to be some of the next timeline points, some of the next steps, some of the next things that you expect are going to happen in this process as we as a state and really a country at this point are watching what happens in Maricopa? What comes next on this?
I think what you said about we as a country watching is a really good point, because it's not about Maricopa County or Arizona at this point. We have eyes on us from across the country. In particular, there's been statements saying that this will be the first domino to fall in the effort to get Trump back in office to prove that he won this election. Those are, of course, far-fetched claims that have no merit at this point, but if these results were to show, like I said, inaccurate or accurate, that there was widespread fraud in this election, you can imagine the number of counties, the number of states that might be looking at a similar type of recount and audit in their state, and what that might lead to as far as how America votes.
To summarize, Jen Fifield, even though that technically there's a graduation at the end of the month, what you're hearing, just to summarize for folks who jumped in, is that the team on the floor there thinks that they can remove all the ballots securely and then keep counting. So originally this was supposed to be a 60-day thing, correct? But it might extend well beyond that into an unknown date in the future.
Yes, I can imagine that I'll be reporting on this for far in the future. Even if they do increase the number of counters, as the Senate has said it wants to do, they want to increase the shifts, they want to increase the number of the manpower involved here. This is still going to take weeks. It's just where they do it and whether that happens at the Coliseum and how long it takes.
Jen Fifield, you've been watching this for a very long time. Appreciate you coming on this morning to report on what you're seeing and hearing. And I think inevitably this will, if you're willing, will not be the last conversation on this show with you as we watch it, monitor it, and get updates. I really appreciate your time, Jen.
Absolutely. I'm glad that people of Tucson are watching as well, even though this is focused on Maricopa County.
Everybody is, as you mentioned. Jen, have a great day. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, that is Jen Fifield, Arizona Republic. Again, had national media appearances this weekend about her reporting. So really cool to have her here in Southern Arizona. Nicole Ludden is up next, the Star's new local government reporter. We'll talk local issues when we come back here on Tipping Point, 1030 The Voice.
Bloomberg Money Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios for this Monday morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. On Monday, we do a no BS, just facts, straightforward look at the news and the stories driving the news coming out of the week. It's our new-ish Monday news hour, and we just wrapped up our conversation with Jen Fifield, a reporter for the Arizona Republic up in Phoenix. She's been one of the pool reporters in the room where it's happening at the Coliseum, over looking over the process, the results, the details of the election audit of 2.1 million Maricopa 2020 ballots. If you missed any of that, you can go back and check out the podcast Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We continue this news hour with a bit more of a local approach. Nicole Ludden, the new local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, is with us now through the balance of the hour. Nicole, good morning to you.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming on. So we're obviously going to get in the weeds on a number of local issues. You had a busy week last week, as did the city of Tucson, mayor and council, and the Pima County Board of Supervisors. But you are new in your role of being the local government reporter for the Star. Who is Nicole, real quick? And can you introduce yourself to our listening audience? And then we'll get into it.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Nicole Ludden. I'm the local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. I just hopped on board here at the beginning of March. I've been in Tucson since September. I originally graduated from the ASU Cronkite School last May, and I'm just kickstarting my journalism career down here in Tucson.
Super. Well, welcome to Tucson. We're glad to have you. And obviously, it's always good to have folks looking at local government and talking about the important stories there. So grateful to have you here and grateful to have you on the show, Nicole.
Thank you.
So let's jump right into, we'll start with the easy topic, Nicole, that being Reed Park Zoo, a story that has been rapidly unfolding in the community. Here's what I want to ask you, because I know you've been looking at this pretty closely. Before we get into the decision that the city council made, what is your knowledge of how, after 40 days of a pause on this project, 30 plus hours of community feedback on some very specific options, a kind of citizen-driven, outside of that committee plan came up that we now know is called G Minor. It made it onto the study session, actually made it into what seemed to be next steps. What do you know about how that G Minor plan came about, and how did it get on the agenda last week?
Yeah, absolutely. So the core stakeholders group, when they met over that 45-day period, they weren't actually able to land on a single option for recommendation to mayor and council, but they did narrow it down to two of eight options proposed, which were dubbed options D and G. And option G was the one that park advocates were mainly advocating for, given that it was one of the only options that would preserve Reed Park space. City Manager Michael Ortega actually recommended the city council adopt a less costly option to the Northwest. But after that recommendation, the Save the Heart of Reed Park folks, a nonprofit formed specifically to advocate for, against the loss of Reed Park space, given that the expansion of the zoo that Reed Park space would take over, they kind of worked with a local architect named Bob Bitt, who came up with this option called G Minor. And basically, the group says the cost would be comparable to the concept Michael Ortega proposed, but would require about $1.5 million to relocate storage buildings that they say would be an option to expand into. And they also are proposing building about a half million concrete arc bridge to connect the expansion space to the zoo. So that's kind of the initiative they came up with after Ortega's recommendation that Marin Council ultimately considered this past Tuesday.
We're with Nicole Ludden, the local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. Nicole, what do you make of the fact that neither option D or option G was the dominant response from the community? When the community was surveyed, in the largest survey to date, I think nearly 14,000 respondents, option B and option C were actually the most strongly favored by the community, both of which really keep the plan to close to what it was before the controversy began. What do you make of that? And what do you know about maybe how the council kind of got around that fact? And I don't mean that, you know, in a negative way per se, but that really wasn't discussed, but it's a piece of this story. What do you make of that? What are you hearing?
Sure. So the goal of that survey was actually to find the most neutral options, right? So they're weighing the options that came out with relatively equal amounts of favor and opposition. And those are options D, expanding Northwest and taking over about 4.5 acres of the park's green space, and C, which is the originally proposed expansion, plus adding a natural resources area to kind of compensate for some of that loss of park space. However, of course, the Marin Council had to weigh this against this pretty extensive conversation between core stakeholders, which we have to remember, you know, these are neighborhood associations, ward representatives, Reed Park Zoological Association, who are really most impacted by whatever the decision the Marin Council made. So I think the Marin Council really was weighing what the opinions of those who kind of have the most at stake here, and also kind of taking into account city staff's recommendation of option B with this large community that's gathered to advocate for Reed Park, for conserving park space.
And Nicole, can you just repeat, just to make sure that I caught it and follow up, architect Bob Vint, a respected architect in the community, I know of his name, great guy, and some of the other neighbors, were those folks involved in the stakeholder conversation? Can you clarify that, or was this kind of an outside effort that was added in sort of-ish last minute?
Yeah, actually, two representatives from Save the Heart of Reed Park were involved in this key stakeholders group, as well as many local neighborhood association representatives who were also advocating for park space. So they did have a pretty significant voice within this core stakeholders group.
Got it. So you see this G Minor plan as an outgrowth of the stakeholder committee from your research, as opposed to kind of a parallel effort near the end?
Yeah. Definitely.
Got it. Nicole Ludden is with us, the new local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star here in the Tucson region. Nicole, what are the next steps? And this is where it got a little bit messy. I think this is where Councilmember Steve Kozacik ultimately gave his no vote. There's a significant amount of restructuring going back to the drawing table on a plan that was really 98% of the way there at the beginning of the year. What are the next steps for the council and this community in moving forward on Reed Park?
Sure. So the council didn't exactly choose a specific footprint of these eight options that general residents and the key stakeholders group were given, but rather they proposed a hybrid of those two concepts we've been discussing, and ultimately they called for expansion north and west of the Edith Ball Adaptive Recreation Center. So some of the caveats within that motion that they passed was redesigning a plan that will ultimately save Barnum Hill and the Southern Duck Pond, that issue that kind of spurred this whole pause to the originally planned expansion. They also plan to minimize the impact of green space, maximum use of hardscape, and stay under 5.5 million. So ultimately, the city has to go back to the drawing board here. They already had a contractor on board, kind of sunk $2 million into that at least. So ultimately, the next steps are to go back to their contractors, see if they can get a new contract underway, and really draw out what this expansion would look like, given that they didn't choose a specific footprint that was proposed to them. So right now, it's kind of a matter of going back to the drawing table. What is this redesign plan going to look like? What is the implications of that, given the land that they're going to be taken up? And how can we continue to work with community members to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Nicole Ludden is with us from the Arizona Daily Star. Last question on this, and then we'll take a break and move on. But when it comes to who pays for what, who ultimately is paying for these changes, could you clarify for us, Nicole, is this City of Tucson dollars? Would this come out of the pot of funding that the Reed Park Zoo gets every month from that proposition on the ballot a few years ago that gives, what is it, about $9 or $10 million a year to the zoo? Mm-hmm. Who's going to foot these costs in the end?
So ultimately, it sounds like the city will be paying for this in terms of that 1/10 cent sales tax increase that was approved by voters in 2017 through Props 202 and 203. It sounds like most of those capital improvements will be funded through taxpayer dollars. Through the form of sales tax.
Right. You know, I've heard out there, and I'm asking this question because I don't know, Nicole, and I appreciate you fielding the question. What I've seen out there is, well, this is not a big deal. The zoo is getting $10 million a year from the voters. So I guess it is City of Tucson, dollars, but it goes to the zoo. But the zoo, in years in advance, right, is planning out where those dollars go. It's not like it's just sitting in a pot, right? So who is kind of footing that expense, I guess, is my question. Will the zoo have to go back and kind of restructure budgets and stuff to should this become a multi-million dollar plan more than it was supposed to be, or how does that work?
Right. So mayor and council finalized the master agreement with the zoo, which included this expansion, in 2018. So the first step here will be going back and kind of reapproving that master plan. It's anticipated that most of those funds will be funded by the zoo tax dollars. However, this is still kind of in the initial planning phases, given that this kind of hit the restart button in a way.
Absolutely. Nicole, I know you're on the cutting edge of this, but there's also a lot yet to be known. So thanks for fielding all of the questions as I'm going, what's going on here? Where are we going? But you are in the weeds more than the average person. So thank you for following that as you are. Let's go to our first break. When we come back, we'll stick with the City of Tucson, then move to the county. Pay raises for the Tucson Police Department and others. The city found out that 81% of staff were underpaid by the local average and the national average for their positions. A big effort was made to solve that last week by the City of Tucson. We'll hear from Nicole Ludden, the new local government reporter for the Star, what that looks like and what it means. On the other side of the break, don't go away.
To Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in the Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios for this Monday morning news hour here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. I am Zach Yenser, joined in studio here via our live line by Nicole Ludden, the new local government reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. We just talked about Reed Park, and now we're moving on to pay raises for the Tucson Police Department and others. And just for the sake of time, Nicole, maybe we can focus on the, I believe it was a $30 million chunk of money that will be paid into the Tucson Police Department to catch up on the gap between what TPD pays and what the rest of the region's municipalities pay their police officers. Is that still the number that you're hearing? Is that the number that was agreed on by the mayor and council last week?
Right. So the mayor and council agreed to implement $30 million into next year's fiscal budget. But that is for all city employees, and that's non-public safety workers, Tucson Police, and Tucson Fire.
Was it six for TPD then?
It's not clear what the exact breakdown would be at this point.
Got it. But if, let's say it is six there. I know that at the same meeting, the city manager, Michael Ortega, provided his draft of the next fiscal year budget. It's a budget that I think, if I was looking correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nicole, it's about the same dollar amount going towards TPD as the last fiscal year budget. Would this allocation by mayor and council, would this be on top of that ask by the city manager?
Yes, this whole compensation plan is kind of an extra influx of cash to bring these employees up to market rate.
Got it. Is that money committed? Did you get a sense of where those dollars are coming from? Is that from a surplus, or how did the manager staff come up with those numbers? Do you know?
Sure. So about $24 million of the funds will come from the city's general fund, and about $8 million will come from things such as HRSA dollars and water taxes and that sort of thing.
Got it. I was talking to a few of my contacts with the Tucson Police Department, and there was a lot of excitement around, hey, this is a good move. I think it was panned very well. And I took time on the show on Friday to say, look, when those things that need to happen, we have to not just say, you know, have a critical look as we often do, but to also say, hey, this was a good move and it's much appreciated. I heard that from TPD, but a lot of folks who've been around, Nicole, said, show me the money first and then I'll get excited. Did you hear any concern from the mayor and council that some of these planned dollars may not pan out, or is there confidence that these dollars will be available from the general fund when they're needed going into next year?
Sure. Well, I think there's always a little hesitation whenever a big expenditure like this is added to the next fiscal year's budget. However, City Manager Michael Ortega is proposing using extra funds from perhaps vacancy savings, you know, those city job titles that aren't taken up over time, saving from not funding those, as well as making this influx of cash to help retain employees over time. He does expect to increase revenues over the years.
Got it. Let's go over to the county, Nicole, again. As you and I chat in preparation for this, this is a busy week. It was a busy week last week. There was a lot to cover, certainly on the city side, but the county also had a big vote. And I want to make sure that this number is correct. Did the county vote, Nicole, to basically apply dollars towards providing 1,000 students in need and in poverty with funded preschool education in Pima County? Tell us about that vote and how much money is going towards it.
Absolutely. So as the Board of Supervisors is prepping for fiscal year 22's budget, a large part of that budget is actually $10 million worth of funding to fund high-quality early education programs for low-income families. Now, Supervisor Rex Scott actually proposed this motion in February, and this past week on Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors approved that. So now they have funding for the first year, and they also gave county staff direction to make this a multi-year program.
Got it. And to your knowledge, is the city of Tucson still committed to contributing $1 million towards that?
Yes. Different jurisdictions throughout the county have proposed different amounts of funding. And overall, those jurisdictions are proposed to fund about $3 million.
Got it. So it could be about $13 million as we go into the next budget for the next fiscal year.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah, that it's not quite universal as I think some of the supervisors would like it to be, but it is hitting a, you know, like you said, 1,000 who are under a certain poverty level. Nicole, thank you for updating us on some of the main stories you were following last week. I think now the fun question is, what's on the horizon for you this week? What are some of the bubbling stories that you're going to watch and may report on in the Daily Star in the future here?
Sure. Well, both the county and city are proposing their fiscal year 2022 budget, so I'm definitely keeping a keen eye out on that. County Supervisor Chuck Huckleberry just proposed a $2.1 billion budget for next fiscal year for the county, which is the largest budget ever proposed, but a lot of that is accounted for by federal COVID-19 relief funds. So I'm really going to be looking at what those different budgets are going to entail and how citizens' taxpayer dollars will be implemented within that and what different programs they'll be used for.
Right. Oh, that's going to be good, especially with those stimulus dollars coming in. Do you have a sense, while we're on that topic, Nicole Ludden, local government reporter for The Star here in Greater Tucson, do you have an idea of how many dollars will come in from the American Rescue Plan for the city of Tucson specifically?
For the city of Tucson, I'm not quite sure, but I do know that about $2.5 million is coming in for the county.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that's used. Nicole, as we wrap up, this is our first show together. I hope certainly not the last. Again, we really try to keep a pulse of the stories that are happening here in our region. But you are here, I believe you said you came in September from the Phoenix area. What do you love about Tucson that Phoenix doesn't have? We'll go completely off the news as we wrap up this first conversation together. What do you love about Tucson that Phoenix doesn't have? Go.
Well, not to say that Phoenix doesn't have a good sense of community, but I really, really have enjoyed the tight-knit sense of the community down here. You know, just moving in, my neighbors have been so friendly, and it just seems like a very more tight-knit community. I also love all of the beautiful vegetation down here, not as much hardscape as there is up in Phoenix. So it's just a really beautiful area to have the privilege to live in.
That's a good assessment. Lots of hardscape in Phoenix. Lots more greenscape. Brownscape, whatever it is,
yeah.
Whatever it is here. Well, Nicole, again, welcome to Tucson. Welcome to the Daily Star. Thanks for hopping on with us, and let's do this again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Zach.
Nicole Ludden, thank you so much. That does it for our show today, but this is a busy week. Tomorrow we're going to talk with Leah Marquez Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner. She had kind of a boring week last week, but she'll be in anyway to discuss it, and that's me being silly. It was a very busy week last week, a little bit of controversy on the Arizona Corporation Commission, so we will discuss that with the commissioner. We will talk to Superintendent Gabe Trujillo from Tucson Unified School District, Supervisor Steve Christie on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, and then as I mentioned, we will sit down with Senate President Karen Fan to close the week, talking about the election audit of 2.1 million Maricopa ballots. We started the week talking about that. We'll end the week with the person who commissioned this. So we're not interested in angles and biases on the show. We want to get the facts, talk to the people in, and at least give you the opportunity as you're listening to figure it out for yourself. But we'll cover all the angles. State Senate President Karen Fan in the news a lot lately this week. We'll have her on our show on Friday. So that is the week ahead. Buckle up, strap in, Tom Callahan. Here we go here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice. That'll do it for our show today. If you missed anything, you can catch it on the podcast. We're on iTunes, Spotify, KVY.com's website, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Search it and you will find it. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that with the Monday political face-off and more. Lots of great local news and talk to get your week started here on this beautiful Monday, May 10th on 1030 The Voice. Take care, Tucson. Stay safe and healthy out there. We'll see you on Tuesday. That's it for us. Zach Yenser here with Tipping Point, signing out. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.